Welcome to the Shortwave Report. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. The Shortwave Report is a 30-minute review of news and opinion heard on the shortwave radio and the internet in Northern California. Listening to the international broadcast at home is quite easy. You could use the shortwave radio with the schedule of English language broadcasts, but it's simpler to use a computer or smartphone with an internet connection. To help you with this, I'll announce times, frequencies, and website addresses at the conclusion of each series of stories. At the website for this show, that's outfarpress.com, you can listen to the past 5 shortwave reports and find advice for listening to shortwave at home. Please check out the website and tell a friend. In today's edition, you'll hear reports from France 24, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, Radio Havana Cuba, and NHK Japan. We will begin with France 24, starting with 3 press reviews about the World Economic Forum that was held in Davos, Switzerland, clearly the biggest international news item. Trump's words, insults, and threats, followed by his slight retraction on Greenland, has clearly damaged the relationship between the U.S. and Europe. Trump was ridiculed in much of the press, not unlike his ridicule of other world leaders. Press on the Israeli crackdown on the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees, including bulldozing the U.N. buildings in occupied Palestine. Oxfam released its annual report on wealth and poverty on Monday, pointing out that billionaires are accelerating the inequality gap. France 24.
Starting off with coverage of the World Economic Forum, what do you got for us?
Well, obviously, it's the big news story on almost every front page. Let's start with Libération here today. They have this quite striking front page. It says, duel at Davos. The paper says the summit has become the theatre of a clash between Donald Trump and Macron. They have this photo of the French president with his glasses looking a bit Tom Cruise-like. He's been wearing those because of an eye problem he's had in the last few days. And this image, of course, comes back quite a lot in the coverage. We can have a look at The Guardian here today. Also another Top Gun-type front page. The paper says that Macron leads the resistance against Trump's Greenland project. Still in the UK, the Financial Times also covering this on their front page with another photo of Macron here. It says the rift between Trump and Europe is deepening, and the paper adds that Republicans might also be starting to push back on Trump's Greenland craze.
Let's start with reactions to Donald Trump and his about-face on taking Greenland by force.
Well, Donald Trump was, of course, in Davos yesterday for the World Economic Forum, where he addressed world leaders. Now, initially, after reinforcing his claims to annex Greenland, he then ruled out trying to take it by force, and he scrapped additional tariffs that he had previously announced on Europe. Now, confusion reigns today, not least of all from Trump himself, who referred to Greenland several times as Iceland in that speech. And you can kind of see a lot of reactions, a lot of confusion in the press today, a lot of uncertainty. This is from Le Figaro, the French right-wing paper, which says that Donald Trump backs down from using force, but he doesn't back down from actually trying to seize Greenland anyway. Libero, this is an Italian daily, which is quite exasperated. It calls Donald Trump's about face radical and sudden. It says the farce is over, but it laments what it calls much hysteria for nothing in the end. Exasperation also from this Danish paper that you see here, which says that now Donald Trump wants to negotiate over Greenland, but the Danish foreign minister, Lars Løkke Rasmussen, has rejected this. The Daily Mirror is a lot more scathing in its front page. It calls Donald Trump daddy fool, calling his speech a delusional rant in which he said that he's loved by European leaders. The paper says that rant was delivered to, quote, an audience of aghast world leaders, while L'Humanité maybe sums it up best with 2 words, crazy ally, it says on its front page.
And is the US press giving Donald any respect?
Not a lot, it must be said, Oliver. This is from Politico, which has a great headline. Donald Trump's Greenland gambit has broken brains across Washington. You might say it's broken brains across the whole world. The news site explains that this push for the island has irrevocably changed the way foreign policy is done in Washington. As for Europe, it's, quote, clearer than ever that even allies are not safe from Donald Trump's, quote, machinations. There's another very interesting website for an opinion piece from MS Now, an American cable news network. Zeeshem Aleem calls Donald Trump's comments head spinning. He says that the US leader is embracing the madman theory hardball tactics. Now, this is a foreign policy idea that says unpredictability and a willingness to threaten force or use force helps a leader intimidate his foes and achieves his goals. Now, Donald Trump might think he's being, quote, slick, but he's steering the U.S. into dangerous territory. That was one analysis. Now, after Venezuela, that unpredictability from Donald Trump could also impact Cuba, because the Wall Street Journal reports today in this exclusive article here that the Donald Trump administration is allegedly seeking to put an end to the communist regime in Cuba by the end of this year.
Jerusalem now. Israel cracking down on the United Nations Agency for Palestinian Refugees.
Yeah, Israel taking its crackdown to a whole new level. Let's have a look at the New York Times. They're covering this story here. Israel has started bulldozing the compound of the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, also known as UNRWA. This article says that the demolition of their offices is just the latest escalation from the Israeli government, which has also passed legislation criminalising UNRWA activity. Sky News is also covering this story here. It quotes the UN, which accuses Israel of an unprecedented attack. A former UNRWA chief of staff has said that, quote, this is another message to the world that Israel is the only country that can demolish international law and get away with it. Let's have a look at Modern Diplomacy magazine. It's based in Bulgaria here. It takes a look at the legal implications of the move. It says that it deepens a dispute about UN property in Israeli-occupied territory and says that it tests the limits of protection for humanitarian agencies.
The world's billionaires reached a record level of wealth in 2025, adding $2.5 trillion to their coffers. The NGO Oxfam released its annual report Monday, warning of widening global inequality and increased political and social control by the super-rich. This income polarization applies to France as well. Oxfam says France's 53 billionaires are now wealthier than 32 million citizens combined, nearly half the country's population. Meanwhile, more than 11 million people in France are living in poverty, a record number. Inheritance plays a large role in this gap.
If children who survive are included, more than 300,000 euros can ultimately be allocated to each of them without any taxation.
Today in France, wealth is taxed far less than labor, and that really raises questions. One out of two French people receive no inheritance. It's a huge factor of inequality in France.
Oxfam released the report to coincide with the start of the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, where many billionaires gather. Another finding denounced by the charity, the effective tax rate of the richest 0.1% is falling. As a result, a billionaire pays proportionally less tax than a nurse. Oxfam calls for increased taxation on the super-rich, with the money redirected to public purposes. In France, though, a proposed minimum tax of 2% on fortunes above 100 million euros, called the Zucman tax, was rejected from the 2026 finance bill.
Those press reviews and report were from France 24, which may be easily found at their website, france24.com, as well as a YouTube channel called France 24 English. Also, most podcast sites, as is the shortwave report. Next, Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle. Trump presented his proposed Board of Peace in Davos. It was to be a way to fix the crises in destroyed Gaza, but it's become what many suggest is an attempt at replacing the United Nations. He invited dozens of countries to sit on the board, which he is the lifetime chairman of. and Europe is by and large repulsed by. An interview with Heba Ali, journalist and director of the United Nations Reform Coalition. She has worked for years to redirect the United Nations into becoming more effective at achieving its goals. Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle.
Donald Trump is due to preside over a ceremony on Thursday celebrating his proposal for a so-called Board of Peace. Now, this was originally part of his Gaza peace plan, meant to oversee the ceasefire and reconstruction in the Palestinian territory. He's now expanding the board's mission to broker solutions to global conflicts, and he's invited dozens of nations and leaders to pay billions to join.
U.S. President Donald Trump has long distrusted international institutions. Now he's announced his own.
We just created the Board of Peace, which I think is going to be amazing. I wish the United Nations could do more. I wish we didn't need a Board of Peace, but the United Nations... And, you know, with all the wars I settled, the United Nations never helped me on one war.
The Board of Peace was originally supposed to be part of Phase 2 of Trump's Gaza peace plan. Along with an executive board and a team of Palestinian technocrats, the board would oversee difficult aspects of the peace plan, like disarming Hamas and beginning reconstruction in Gaza. But now it's become a work in progress with an expanding mission. It seems that Trump himself is the only one who really knows what's happening as the invitations go out. He is the lifetime chairman of the board. Even the White House webpage on the board still refers to the reconstruction of Gaza. But the U.S. has sent out a draft proposal to world leaders, saying it will embark on a bold new approach to resolving global conflict. There's a $1 billion fee to become a permanent member. The list of who's been invited to join contains an odd mix of world leaders. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has already accepted. There's Belarusian President Alexander Lukashenko, Russia's Vladimir Putin, and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky, whose country is fighting a bloody war with Russia. Several countries have already signaled they won't take part or have said flat out no, including traditional U.S. allies France, Italy, and Norway. The United Nations has failed to stop or even mitigate multiple conflicts in recent years, including Russia's full-scale invasion of Ukraine, and Israel's war with Hamas in Gaza. Time will tell if Trump's Board of Peace can do better, or if it becomes a billionaire's club where nations and leaders pay to play.
Let's explore this with Heba Ali, who is a journalist and director of the UN Charter Reform Coalition. It's a group calling for change in the United Nations. Welcome to DW. This sounds like Donald Trump's attempt to either replace or circumvent the UN, which has become increasingly ineffective. As an organisation that's campaigned for change at the UN, is this something you welcome?
No. We certainly do welcome the desire for change at the UN, but not in this way. What Trump is doing is putting a nail in the coffin of the UN. This is circumventing the UN altogether. And yes, there is justification, or there is merit in his justification that the UN has been ineffective. But if we believe the UN is ineffective, and by the way, the UN is in part ineffective because of the actions of the United States, then let's fix the UN. But the answer is not putting responsibility for maintaining peace and security in the hands of one individual who sets up an exclusive club, names himself chairman for life, and charges a $1 billion membership fee, as you just heard. And I do believe that if this board is legitimized by world leaders, it sets a very, very dangerous precedent.
You say, if it's wrong, then let's fix it rather than go round it. But haven't we seen over the UN's lifetime that it is dominated by the Security Council? Members of the Security Council are now causing problems all over the world. Well, maybe the answer is to give it some competition. We've seen this president bully NATO's 30-odd members into increasing their military spending. Why wouldn't he be able to bully members of this board, or indeed the UN, into seeing the world a little differently and being a little more effective?
Well, again, I would say that the reason the UN isn't effective is because of certain members of its Security Council, and the United States is one of them. And so setting up an alternative body doesn't fix that problem. I think there are certainly challenges in trying to reform the UN, but we do have some windows of opportunity. And if we are to give President Trump credit, it is that the current situation has pushed, in particular, European leaders so far against the wall that they are now ready to be more ambitious and more courageous in trying to reform a system that we all know has not been fit for purpose for some time. It was created in 1945. It is out of date. It certainly needs an update. The good news is that there is a channel through which to do so. It's called Article 109. It's a review clause that was included in the founding document of the United Nations that allows for this set of rules to be updated, including the rules that give these five permanent members of the Security Council a veto power, which, as we know, has been at the heart of so much of the dysfunction. So I think the moment is now, and we really are in something of a 1945 moment where the old world order is crumbling, a new one is going to be built, and we need to be really intentional about how we rebuild it in a way that is democratic, that is inclusive, and that is fair. And Article 109 review process allows for us to renegotiate the rules of the game and set the United Nations up for the next 80 years, revitalize the institution. But we have to agree that a universal body where every country has a vote is essential. And if we start to privatize resolving peace and security issues, we're in a very dangerous world where the powerful do what they want and trample on the weak.
Which is where we are, many would argue, at the moment. And from what you've said, it sounds like you think that the biggest update, to use your words, that the UN needs now is the Security Council.
Yes, I think at the moment we can all agree that the peace and security system of the United Nations isn't working. It has not resolved challenges in Ukraine, in Gaza, in Venezuela, now the threats to annex Greenland. So absolutely, that needs reform. The question is, how do we do it? And there has been a process ongoing for decades now that hasn't led anywhere. Article 109 is an idea that is fresh and new and opens new doors and hopefully can inject some new wind. But the idea is really, what is the new global social contract that we need for this day and age? We're in a very different world, as I said, than 80 years ago. And so it's time to sit down and imagine what is the role of the UN in the 21st century and create a space for countries to get together and build that new vision that then addresses the challenges that President Trump says he's trying to do with this peace board.
Thank you for joining us, Heba Ali from the UN Charter Reform Coalition.
That interview is from Germany's Radio Deutsche Welle, which may be heard at a combined audio-video website, dw.com, as well as on YouTube at their channels called DW News and DW Documentary. They are also available at most podcast sites, as is the Shortwave Report. Next, Radio Havana, Cuba. Venezuelans continue to denounce the U.S. invasion and kidnapping of President Maduro and his wife. Radio Havana, Cuba.
Venezuelans continue to denounce the military attack carried out by the U.S. military on January the 3rd, 2 weeks ago, and the kidnapping of the presidential couple, Nicolas Maduro, the president, constitutional president of Venezuela, and First Lady Celia Flores. They are declaring that it is an act of aggression representing a fatal blow to international law. The Trump's administration's chain of crimes and illegal actions began with the extrajudicial killings of attacks on vessels in the Caribbean and the Eastern Pacific, and continued with an air embargo and naval blockade against Venezuela, culminating in the military aggression, the attack and bombings on January the 3rd against Caracas and other locations in Venezuela, in which about 100 Venezuelans were killed. 32 Cuban collaborators were also killed, 32 Cubans who were combatants and held off that attack for more than 2 hours before the president, Nicolas Maduro, and First Lady Celia Flores were kidnapped and taken to the United States. Since the date of that attack, Saturday 2 weeks ago, thousands of people in all regions of the world have joined the outcry of Venezuelans who are leading a continuous mobilization demanding the release of their leaders, expressing their support for interim president Delcy Rodriguez, who is also continuing to work on an agenda of constitutional president and asserting their sense of sovereignty and self-determination in the face of U.S. interventionist ambitions. People are in the streets 24 hours a day, day and night, for the past 2 weeks, demanding the return of Nicolás Maduro. In the mobilization, various sectors have come together from Venezuela, including the indignation of the transportation sectors, campesinos, workers, and others who have been in the streets all the time to demand that the Bolivarian Revolution's leader, Nicolás Maduro, be freed.
That report was from Radio Havana, Cuba. Cuba's website is working, well, some of the time at radiohc.cu, but there's no podcast. On shortwave, Cuba may be heard from noon to 1 p.m. at 15140 and from 6 p.m. to midnight at 6000. At their website, radiohc.cu, you can stream the English version at noon, Monday through Friday, Pacific Standard Time, most of the time, not always. If you have questions or comments about the shortwave report or could help support this show, like subscribers in Willits, California, Nevada, and Cleveland did this week, my PayPal contact information is available at my website, outfarpress.com, or by writing to Dan Roberts at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490. I am truly grateful for the donations. They are essential for the weekly production and website fees for this show, which I supply freely to more than 100 radio stations around the world. We will conclude with NHK World Radio Japan. At the beginning of the week, the European Union was considering putting over $100 million in tariffs on the United States in response to tariffs that Trump had threatened on EU countries defending Greenland. A just-restarted nuclear power plant in central Japan was shut down due to a malfunction during startup. Nepal will have a general election in March, and young voters in Gen Z intend to create candidates and change, focusing on ending corruption. NHK Japan.
The European Union is reportedly considering slapping the United States with 93 billion euros worth of tariffs. That's after President Donald Trump called for new levies on eight European countries that have opposed his bid to take over Greenland. The Financial Times quoted sources on Sunday saying the EU nations are eyeing the tariffs, which amount to about $108 billion. It said they're also thinking of restricting American companies from the EU market. The British media outlet also said the retaliation measures are being drawn up to give European leaders leverage in pivotal meetings with Trump at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland, which starts Monday. Trump wants the U.S. to acquire the Danish autonomous territory. He said on social media Saturday, the U.S. will charge a 10% tariff on products from the eight European countries, including Denmark and Britain, from next month. That number will rise to 25% in June. The British government said on Sunday, Prime Minister Keir Starmer had spoken on the phone with Trump and told him it was wrong to apply tariffs on allies. On the same day, Trump wrote on social media, NATO has been telling Denmark for 20 years it has to get the Russian threat away from Greenland. He added, now it is time and it will be done. The EU will hold a leaders' meeting in Belgium, likely on Thursday, to discuss its responses. Tokyo Electric Power Company says it's decided to shut down a reactor at its Kashiwazaki Kariwa nuclear plant. This is because of a malfunction. TEPCO says there are no safety issues and no impact on surrounding areas. The plant is in the central prefecture of Niigata. Staff suspended extraction of control rods in the number 6 reactor in the early hours of Thursday when an alarm sounded. The alarm was related to the operation and monitoring of the control rods. By the time it sounded, 52 out of 205 rods had been extracted. Staff suspected a problem with electrical systems and replaced some components.
We don't think this will be resolved in a day or two. We can't say how long it's going to take. First of all, we want to investigate the cause.
The number 6 reactor is the first run by TEPCO to go back online since the disaster at the Fukushima Daiichi nuclear power plant in 2011. It just resumed operation Wednesday. The restart had been scheduled for Tuesday. It was postponed after a problem with an alarm setting was found during a control rod test.
People in Nepal face a major turning point in March when a general election could be shaped by the young voters of Gen Z. The poll comes on the heels of protests against corruption and economic inequality last year that left dozens dead and brought down the government. NHK World's Mita Murataro has the story.
In September, a government edict to cut off Nepalese access to social media in the name of stopping fake news sent thousands onto the streets in protest. The parliament and the court building were torched, while 76 people, mostly young demonstrators, lost their lives in clashes with security forces. 28-year-old Prakash Kohola was shot in the leg at one of the demos.
We have been calling for a stable government free from corruption. We also want enough job opportunities here so we don't have to go abroad to work. We'll continue fighting.
The youth of Nepal have high expectations for the next government.
They will not just vote again all corrupted people. That's my opinion.
The leader would keep our trust and do what the country deserves.
New movements with young leaders aim to get more Gen Zers involved in politics.
We can come to a digital consensus on multiple matters that concerns the youth, politics, economy, or other matters. You know, even the smallest of the matters that concerns the ward, or the biggest of the matter that concerns the whole country as well.
Another group has joined a new party that been formed for the election. They are calling for an end to corruption and inequality. 28-year-old lawyer Ojaswi Batarai plans to run in the election. If she wins, she said she also wants to work with her like-minded Gen Z colleagues to eliminate discrimination based on sexual orientation and protect the rights of ethnic minorities. The frustration of Nepal's young people with the current state of politics has clear potential to reshape their nation. It's an energy that, if successful, could influence Gen Zers in other Asian nations as well. Mita Murataro, NHK World, Kathmandu.
Those reports were from NHK World Radio Japan on shortwave. They're heard at 9 p.m. at 11735 or on the web at www.3.nhk.or.jp. NHK may be easily found at most podcast sites. All the times I announce are for Pacific Standard Time, so adjust them to your time zone. One of my goals in producing this show is to encourage people like you to listen to international broadcasts, get a global perspective. You do have to look harder these days because of U.S. and EU prohibitions on media. Every Thursday evening, I post a new shortwave report at the website for this show. That's outfarpress.com. At my website, you can also listen to past shows, find information for online support. There's a link at my website along with the podcast link, and get advice for listening at home. The Shortwave Report, which is now in its 29th year of production, remains free to rebroadcast upon notification. I'm your host and producer, Dan Roberts. Thanks for listening.